It's Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden age. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Drama in this hour. Later on, we'll hear the Hallmark Playhouse with a ghost story from Edith Wharton. Right now, it's the Encore Theater from June 25th, 1946 on CBS. The story is Green Light, with Kathy Lewis, Robert Young, Pedro de Cordoba, Lorene Tuttle, and Jim Backus.
The Shanley Laboratories, producer of penicillin Shanley and Shanley Pharmaceuticals, presents the Encore Theater. The Encore Theater play tonight, Green Light. Our star is Robert Young. Tonight, Shanley Laboratories presents another in a new series of great dramatic programs. Some of our stories are fact, the struggles and accomplishments of great men of medicine. Others are fiction, stories of devotion to an ideal, individual heroism, or great courage. By these programs, Shanley Laboratories would remind you that medical science and progress is not cold, impersonal research or pages of statistics, but a warm human story told in living terms, whether it's the life of one of medicine's immortals or the simple everyday record of service rendered by your own physician. And now, Green Light, starring Robert Young as Dr. Newell Page and with Pedro de Cordoba as Dean Harcourt. The story of a doctor.
Newell Page, surgeon, Bay Tree Hospital.
And of a girl.
Phyllis Dexter. I hated Dr. Page. I thought I would always hate him.
The story, too, of a nurse.
Frances Ogilvy, staff, Bay Tree Hospital. I loved Dr. Page. I thought I would always love him.
The story of a woman of great faith and courage.
My mother, Mrs. John Dexter.
And of a great religious man, Dean Harcourt of Trinity Cathedral.
Man's progress in life is not steadily onward. Sometimes he is stopped by something that is bigger and stronger than he. Something he cannot understand and over which he has no control. That's something I like to think of as a red light, flashing a halt to the forward surge of his life. And I like to believe there's a power which controls that light, which knows in its infinite wisdom that sometimes man must stop to learn through suffering before going on. For it is as inevitable as time that man progresses to a better future. If not for himself, then through his suffering for his fellow men. When he has learned this, the signal changes, and the green light frees him to resume his inexorable march into eternity.
You have been listening to...
Oh, turn it off now, Dr. Page.
What would religion be without music?
There was religion long before there was music.
I'm sorry. The usual greeting for the doctor is, and how is the little lady this morning?
And I suppose the usual answer is, terrible, doctor.
But since we both are unusual people, I'd say your pulse shows marvelous repose for a patient facing surgery.
You can thank Dean Harcourt for that.
I do. Just as I'm thankful for anything that gives a patient courage and confidence.
A shorter word for courage and confidence is faith.
Whatever it is, you'll need every bit of it now.
More bad news?
Oh, nothing really serious, except that, well, it's not easy to prepare oneself mentally for an operation. Sometimes a postponement can cause a harmful reaction. What I'm trying to say is...
You're trying to tell me my operation has been postponed?
Yes, Dr. Endicott has been detained in Milwaukee. He'll be here as soon as he can.
Milwaukee's a beautiful city. It's always seemed full of music to me. Years ago, we used to go there to hear the community singing.
You make it work, don't you?
No. I simply let it work.
How simple things would be if we all had your faith. I'll let you know about the operation as soon as I possibly can.
I know you will.
any word of Dr. Endicott yet, Miss Ogilvy?
No, Doctor. They can't seem to locate him.
Here are Mrs. Dexter's x-rays, Newell.
Thanks. Good Lord, look at that. She can't hold out much longer. We've got to do something.
We'll have to wait for Endicott. She's his patient.
We can't postpone this operation any longer. Her life is at stake now. I'll phone surgery.
Are you crazy?
Not unless these x-rays are.
Surgery.
Surgery, this is Dr. Page.
You can't do that. Endicott will...
We'll operate on Mrs. Dexter immediately. Clamp, Miss Ogilvy.
Yes, Dr. Page.
Forceps.
Dr. Page?
Yes, Dr. Endicott.
Thank you, Doctor. If you will assist me, I can take over now.
Yes, sir.
The forceps, Miss Ogilvy. Dr. Page, make a tie, please.
She's bleeding badly. Quick.
Well, I'm afraid that's that. I did everything I could. She shouldn't have died, Newell. You were doing perfect work. If Endicott had been less upset...
I'd rather not talk about it.
I saw exactly what happened, and I'm going to tell everybody the truth.
Don't you think it's Dr. Endicott's privilege to make his own statement first?
Come in.
Hello, Dr. Endicott.
Oh, Newell, glad you came in. I've been wanting to talk to you. Now, sit down. Nasty business is Dexter's death. I've been trying to convince the board of directors that her death was an unavoidable accident. It was unavoidable, wasn't it?
No, sir. For some reason, you cut the pedicle too short for safe ligation. I couldn't make the tie, and the hemorrhage resulted. It should never have happened. The problem now is...
I probably shouldn't have stepped in on the operation, realizing the terrific strain I'd been under. We all love Mrs. Dexter. I felt that her life was my personal responsibility, but all planes had been grounded on account of weather. I've moved heaven and earth to get here in time. I haven't slept in 2 days. Too tired.
I'm sorry, sir.
A split second, woman dies, and a whole career dies with her. A split second is against the 40 years I've given to medicine. I can't be judged on one operation out of thousands, Newell. I can't.
Newell.
Hello, John. What time is it?
Time for you to pull yourself together. Get down to the hospital and tell Endicott and the board where to head in.
I can't do that.
Why not?
What do you want me to do? Stand up before the board and say, dear, dear, kind gentlemen, it doesn't matter to me that Dr. Endicott taught me everything I know about surgery. It doesn't matter that Dr. Endicott is one of the finest surgeons in the country. It doesn't matter how many lives he's saved, how much pain he's eased, how much comfort he's brought. No, none of that's important. Just me. I'm the only one who's important. Big, important Dr. Page.
I know it's tough, Newell, but you've got to protect yourself.
A split second. A woman dies and a career dies with her. That isn't right either. Endicott's a human being, too. He's not infallible.
That's no concern of yours. If you resign, you admit that you were responsible for Mrs. Dexter's death.
Exactly.
Well, that clears Endicott completely.
Right.
Confound it, you sound as if you were going to resign.
I have already.
Dean Harcourt, I'm Frances Ogilvy. I was the nurse on the... I was Mrs. Dexter's nurse.
Oh, I see.
She always listened to your broadcast, and I had to talk to someone, so... You see, I know what happened in that operating room, and Dr. Page won't defend himself because of professional ethics, and I wanted to speak up, but I thought I should talk to someone first.
No man makes sacrifices without reason. Whatever that reason may be, it's in itself compensation for his suffering.
But why should Dr. Page sacrifice himself for Endicott?
For the moment, that's Dr. Page's problem, not yours. He must have had good reasons, otherwise he wouldn't do it. There's nothing you can do except respect that reason.
I see. I've taken a lot of your time. Is there something I can do to repay you?
Yes. Phyllis Dexter's waiting to see me. She's pretty upset about her mother's death. Before I talk to her, I want you to take her to the little anteroom where you were taken. Ask her whatever questions you wish. Then come back to me and tell me what she says.
Just throw your coat anywhere, Phyllis. Sorry, the apartment's a little messy.
Oh, it's not messy at all. I feel much better after talking to you, and it was very kind of you to invite me over.
Not at all. I got some coffee on. Will you answer the door, please?
Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought this was Miss Ogilvy's apartment.
It is. Come in. Who shall I tell her is calling?
Noah. Hello.
Hello, Frances.
Well, come in. Come in. Can I take your coat?
No, thanks. I can only stay a moment.
Well, perhaps I'd better go now. I had no idea you were expecting a visitor.
I wasn't. He's the last person in the world I ever expected to see here.
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't expect to be here myself. I was out walking in the rain when suddenly, to my surprise, I found myself in front of your house.
Miss Dexter, Miss Phyllis Dexter, just returned from England today.
Phyllis Dexter?
Miss Ogilvy sort of kidnapped me away from myself.
I wish she could do as much for me. That is, I've got to run along. It's an appointment.
Miss Dexter, may I introduce Mr. Walker?
If you're as nice as Miss Ogilvy, you'll be well worth knowing.
Well, thank you.
Sit down, Noel.
Well, just for a moment. I really can't stay. Did you enjoy London?
Yes, very much. Why are you staring at me?
Oh, I'm sorry. You remind me so much of someone.
Really?
Yes, someone very lovely. I never expected to meet anyone like that again. Time decides so many things, doesn't it? A split second of time, something happens. Two people meet accidentally. A knife slips. Someone takes the wrong turn. Anything. And without warning, a future has been created.
Evidently, you're a fatalist.
Hardly. I only know that things happen. Sometimes it seems with deliberate cruelty. Don't let anything happen to you or hurt you. Well, I've got to go now. Good night.
Good night.
What a strange man.
Yeah. He's a great guy. He's one of a kind. At least, he's the only one I've ever seen.
Do you think he'll call again soon?
Honey, there's no way of telling what he'll do, ever. As Dean Harcourt would say, the signals have changed. The lights are against him right now. But he'll get the green light again. He can't miss.
Harcourt, I came here to argue with you about your concept of everlasting life.
All right. Please sit down.
I want to know how you can justify needless death, greed, and the destruction of a career. I want to know how you can reconcile such waste with your irresistible onward drive.
Why?
I'm the Dr. Page who operated on Mrs. Dexter.
I see. You have a fine religion, Dr. Page.
I have none, so far as I know.
Religion has many definitions, at least in my dictionary, such as loyalty, devotion, honor.
Perhaps, but my dictionary defines it as a kind of opiate used by people with hurt sensibilities to dull them into drowsiness. A man needs more than that in his life, something he can get his hands on, something for which to live.
Or else something for which to die.
I can't even think of anything to die for.
Yes, come in. Hello, Phyllis.
Hello, Dean Harcourt. Hello, Mr. I had no idea you knew Dean Harcourt.
I didn't until a short while ago.
Then you must be in some trouble.
Is that why you're here?
Well, Dean Harcourt was my mother's friend. He's mine, too. I hoped we'd meet again. I wanted to ask you to explain some of the strange things you said last night.
I'm always saying strange things that I can't explain myself. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Well, I had no idea you two knew each other.
I'd met Mr. Walker last night.
Splendid, you two should make excellent friends.
I'm afraid Mr. Walker doesn't agree with you.
That's not it, Miss Dexter. You might have made very good friends, but we met a little too late.
My goodness, it's lunchtime already. You must be frightfully hungry, Phyllis.
I beg your pardon?
I said you must be hungry.
I'm not.
Sorry, I can't offer you any lunch. You eat, don't you?
Me? Oh, sure, sure. I eat often.
When I was a young man, I was always taking a young lady to luncheon, particularly if I'd had some sort of misunderstanding. In fact, I was known as Hungry Harcourt.
You win, Dean. Shall we have lunch, Miss Dexter?
Let's.
Good. You two run along and have a good time. And by the way, if you have no other plans, have dinner with me next Friday, both of you.
I'd love to.
So would I.
And bring Miss Ogilvy with you.
Yes, I'll ask her. Goodbye.
See you Friday.
About 8.
Goodbye.
You're a strange man.
Why do you say that?
One moment you're so friendly, and the next you... Why did you say we met too late?
Let's sit down on this bench a moment.
All right.
Last night, when I met you, it was like... Well, it was almost like the beginning of a world for me. I don't know how to explain it very well, except that for a moment, it was like the dawn coming up after a long, dark night. It was as though, in finding you, I'd found an answer to everything, to every heartache, to every loneliness, to every torment. I looked at you and I wanted to say, if you will spend your days with me, I'll have everything I've ever dreamed about.
You thought all that?
Yes.
You know what I thought? I thought, in some strange way, in one look, with one smile, this man has put his hand upon my heart and made it his. And I thought, this is the beginning of many things.
It was the beginning, but it was also the ending.
The ending? Why?
Because your name is Phyllis Dexter, and mine is Newell Page, Dr. Newell Page.
Newell Page? Page?
Yes, that's why I didn't want to see you again. At least, not until I could find some way of telling you. You have no reason for hating me.
No reason? You killed my mother.
No.
Well, then who did? You might at least have been man enough to accept the blame.
You don't understand. It was not
I think I do understand. Goodbye, Dr. Page.
I can't understand why he isn't here.
No, he's usually very prompt.
Well, he'll be along. Did you two have a nice luncheon the other day, Phyllis?
We didn't go to lunch.
Oh?
Why not? What happened?
Nothing.
You're not telling the truth.
You lied to me. You introduced Dr. Page as Mr. Walker.
I see.
Why?
Because I saw no reason to upset you or him. I'd do anything I could to make things easier for him.
Why should he have things made easier for him?
Phyllis, you're...
Don't say it. Don't say it. I'm sick of philosophies and sermons and parables. I'm a human being. I have a right to hate or love.
Phyllis, what did Page do to you?
He killed my mother.
There's something else. Something within you that's been killed.
He lied to me.
You love him.
I don't. I despise him. He didn't even have the decency to take the blame himself.
Did he name another doctor?
Oh, no. How could he?
That's right. How could he? He's too decent, too honest to break the rules he plays by.
Why do you say that?
Tell her, Frank.
No. No, I'll play according to Page's rules now. He didn't have to listen to sermons to become good. He was born that way, and he'll always be that way, no matter what happens to him.
I don't understand.
You will, eventually. You see, my dear, until you have faith, you don't really love. Francis.
Yes.
I've learned much from you today. Thank you.
Will you excuse me from dinner, please, Dean Harcourt?
Where are you going?
To find him.
I'll answer the door.
Telegram for Dean Harcourt. Sign here.
Yes, thank you. It's for you.
Oh.
What? What is it?
I'm afraid you'll have to go a long way, Phyllis. He's in Montana.
Montana?
This wire is from Dr. Lane. He says Newell asked him to wire and explain that he couldn't come to dinner. And he says he's very ill. He deliberately let a wood tick bite him so that he could infect himself with spotted fever.
Spotted fever?
He wants to be used as a human guinea pig
to test the vaccine.
Oh, no!
Come on. We've got to get Dr. Endicott in a hurry. Dr. Endicott, Dr. Page is with John Lane.
On Boone Mountain?
Yes.
I won't have him in that pest hole. He'll die like all the rest.
He may be dying now. He's down with spotted fever. He gave it to himself to test a vaccine.
My fault if he dies. My fault. He mustn't die. I won't let him. We'll charter a plane. Get out there right away.
What's my temperature?
It was 102.9 an hour ago. How do you feel?
Not bad. Kind of groggy. Pain in the lower quadrant of the abdomen. Make a note of it. I want to see how long it lasts.
Why did you ever do such a fool thing? Deliberately infecting yourself, risking your life.
If I die, I don't particularly care. And you'll have learned something. There, seems to be a congestion developing in the lungs. How about taking a blood count? I'd like to see if I'm losing any resistance.
Hello, Dr. Lane. How is he?
Is he conscious?
Yes, but he's sinking. We'll go right in. Not you, Miss Dexter. We don't want to upset him.
All right.
Hello, Newell.
Hello, Dr. Endicott. Francis, we can use you. John's getting sick of keeping my chart.
We aren't going to let you die.
You won't have anything to say about it if that vaccine doesn't work. At the present, I share the same place in society with the guinea pig. John?
Yes, Newell.
Make that blood count. Watch my temperature closely. I'm becoming stuporous.
He's unconscious.
No, not yet. Keep your nerve, Francis. You're an old hand at this sort of thing.
Yes, Dr. Page.
What's my temperature?
104.1.
Heart action. Weakening. John.
Better not talk, Newell.
Take another blood count. Temperature 104.1. Should break before it reaches 105. Can't take 105.
Francis, if he dies, I will have killed him just as I killed Mrs. Dexter.
What did you say, Dr. Endicott?
I was to blame, Phyllis. I was at fault, and I never should have let him take the blame. He's got to live. If there's any justice at all, he's got to live.
Now you know what you needed to know, Phyllis.
No. I haven't really needed to know anything since the moment when I knew I loved him.
His temperature's up to 104.2.
I'll go right in. Temperature, last four readings, steady, 104.2.
Dr. Endicott, can't you do something? We can't just sit here and let him die.
There's nothing we can do for him now, except pray.
Francis, Phyllis, Dr. Endicott. His temperature. Look at his temperature.
103.1.
It's licked. Phyllis, it's licked. He's going to live. He's going to be all right.
Endicott, there's a place for you out here.
No, you fellows have already done the most important work on spotted fever. You won't need me here.
But the people will need great doctors to help them through their birth. Doctors who haven't forgotten their oath to their fellow men. To share my substance with him and to relieve his necessities when required.
I guess I lost sight of what being a doctor means for a while, Newell. But I think I've got the green light now myself.
You've been listening to Dean Harcourt, too.
Yes, I've been listening. And I'm going to stay out here.
Newell, a letter just came from Baytree.
Yes, I wrote them explaining everything.
Holy smoke. They've appointed me chief surgeon at Baytree.
Oh, I'm so proud of you, darling.
Oh, Phyllis. Phyllis, how rich I am. How fortunate, how lucky, how happy, how grateful. There aren't enough adjectives to say it.
I don't like to interrupt love's young dream, but it's time for Dean Harcourt.
Oh, the depth of the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding. For who has known the mind of the Lord? Or who hath been his counselor? Or who hath first given to him, and it shall be recompensed unto him again? For of him, and through him, and in him are all things. To him be glory forever. Amen.
Green Light by Lloyd C. Douglas was produced and directed by Bill Lawrence and was broadcast through the courtesy of Warner Brothers.
The Encore Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from June 25th, 1946 on CBS. From the same year that star Robert Young was appearing in a movie based on a radio show, Claudia and David. The first one was in 1943 with co-actress Dorothy McGuire. That was her film debut, the second in 1946. An interesting case because it was on CBS radio from July to September of 1941 with a short revival in 1948, proving to be a more popular film franchise than in the theater of the mind. It's an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now on to the Hallmark Playhouse with the Edith Wharton story, Afterward, featuring Willard Waterman, Lorene Tuttle, and Joseph Kearns from August 5th, 1948 on CBS.
Tonight from Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you an exciting dramatization of an unforgettable story on the Hallmark Playhouse. Tonight's story was chosen from the world of fiction by one of the world's best-known authors. Hallmark is proud to present the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight on the Hallmark Playhouse, we offer the first radio performance of a strange and fascinating story called Afterward by one of America's greatest writers, Edith Wharton. You know, there are some stories that touch the heart, others that tickle the funny bone, but tonight's story touches the mind and your spine at the same time. Mrs. Wharton is probably best known for her novel Ethan Frome, but all her stories are marked with a great delicacy and sensitiveness. And this story tonight employs that same skill. Now, stories about things that seem supernatural to us are usually taken with a grain of salt. You and I are much too well informed to believe in ghosts, aren't we? Though sometimes, late at night. But don't let me influence you. Someone once said that the shortest ghost story in the world was a single sentence, as follows. She reached for the matches, and they were handed to her. You know, there was...
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Hilton. Would you repeat that?
Surely. She reached for the matches, and they were handed to her.
Well, I don't see how you could get a ghost story much shorter than that.
Well, there was quite a discussion in a New York paper on this question some time back. But if any of our listeners know of one shorter, I'd be very glad to hear from them. Anyhow, Mrs. Wharton's story, which we're doing tonight, is somewhat longer. But I do think it employs the same peculiar skill. It seemed at first to Mary Boyne that Ling in Dorsetshire stood at the crossroads of the winds. There was almost always the wind around the towers and turrets and Tudor battlements of the old English house. But Mary Boyne liked it. It belonged there. Like the ivy and yew hedges, the wind around Ling was timeless, like Ling itself. And Mary Boyne, American and Midwesterner, loved it.
was England, I thought in the train, sitting beside my husband. This was what we had worked for so hard. And now, with the success of the Blue Star Mine, we had it. A place for me to dream in. A place for Ned, where he could have solitude to write his book at last. Ahead, Dorsetshire in southwest England. Dorsetshire. And Ling, standing forever in the wind.
I wish I could share your enchantment over a drafty South of England castle, Mary, but I have a certain Midwestern American fondness for electricity, for one thing.
You'll use oil lamps and get to love them.
Yeah, the place is probably drafty, dark, damp, and in all likelihood, very thoroughly haunted.
You needn't laugh.
Huh?
Ling is haunted.
Did your friend Alida Stair tell you that when she rented it to you?
I wouldn't have a house in Dorsetshire without a ghost, but you won't know it until afterwards.
Won't know what till after.
That you've seen the ghost.
Well, what's the use of seeing a ghost if you don't know it?
I'm just telling you what Alida Stair told me. You see the ghost and don't realize it. And then suddenly, long afterwards, you say to yourself, that was it.
Oh, can't we do better than that, Mary? Life is too short for a ghost that can be enjoyed only in retrospect.
Well, I'm a simple girl from home, Ned. Any ghost will do for me.
Ah, that's the spirit.
It was good to be in that old house, to sit in the thick October dusk before the fireplace, with the downs outside the mullioned windows darkening to a deeper solitude. It was what we had wanted and had scarcely dared hope for. Then, what was wrong? Why did Ned, who had never worried or fretted, seem so anxious these days and preoccupied? Some sort of invisible barrier had come between us here at Ling. Why here? And why now, after all these years of no secrets between us? As well as I might, I tried to find out what was bothering Ned.
Why, nothing is bothering me, Mary. Nothing at all.
Well, probably I'm just imagining things.
No doubt about it. This moody house is just a place for imagining things.
That's quite true. After all, it's supposed to be haunted.
Call it that. Personally, I have no respect for a ghost who hasn't the gumption to let you know when you're seeing one right on the spot.
Oh, then... You haven't seen it.
Mary, are you serious?
Well, it's just that you've been so strange.
I'm preoccupied because of my book. That's all.
All right.
Ghost.
All right. I'm happy. Then, only a few days later, I suddenly became the heroine in a dusty old novel. I was putting some books on a shelf when my hand pressed a molding. With a rustle and a whisper, a panel slid back, showing a spiral staircase winding upward into the dusty gloom behind the thick wall. Incredible! Incredible and exciting! And priceless! Ned! Ned, hurry! Come running! Look what I found!
So this is where your spiral staircase leads. A ledge on the roof.
Well, isn't that enough? I think it's exciting.
Well, it's a nice view. If you can stand up in the wind to enjoy it.
Oh, look, there's a fish pond. And there's the yew hedge. And the cedars.
Hello. What's that?
What?
In the lime grove. See?
No.
It's a man. In that gray coat. Can't you see?
Oh, yes, I see him now. Who is he?
I'll be right back.
Ned, wait.
I've got to talk to that man. I'll be back.
Ned! Ned! Ned, I hoped I'd find you here in the library.
No cause for alarm, dear.
Ned, what happened?
Why, nothing.
Who was it?
Who?
The man we saw from the ledge just now.
Oh, I thought it was Peter, so I dashed down to tell him about the stable drains. He disappeared before I got to him.
Disappeared?
I'll talk to him later about it. Shall we ask Trimley to serve lunch?
Weeks passed, but not the strangeness that had fallen upon my husband. There was some dim enchantment about the house, about the lonely downs. What was it? What was it? There was an evening when I stood at the window watching the blue dusk move across the downs. And as I peered out, a dim figure shaped itself far down the path among the lime trees. My heart thumped, and the skin prickled icily on my forearm. But in the next moment, the figure gathered substance and character, and I saw that it was my husband walking slowly toward me and into the house.
What's the matter, Mary? You look a bit shaken.
Oh, it's really too absurd, but I can never remember.
Remember what?
That when one sees the Ling ghost, he doesn't know it until afterward.
Did you think you saw it?
Well, I actually took you for the ghost.
Really? If that's the best you can do, you'd better give it up.
I am giving it up.
Oh, I see there's some afternoon mail for me.
Are you?
Bill, publisher. Am I what?
Giving up trying to see the ghost.
I never tried. Newspapers are always 4 days late. Have you any idea how long afterward?
Why, no. Have you?
No, of course not. Oh, here's a letter for you.
Oh, thank you.
There's so much fantastic whimsy. Let's drop it once and for all.
I'm satisfied with that. I wonder who'd send you a letter all the way out. Ned!
Yes?
What's this in my envelope?
Looks like a newspaper clipping.
I can see that for myself, but what does it mean?
Well, that depends on what it says, doesn't it?
Well, it says that a man named Robert Elwell has brought suit against you over the Blue Star Mine.
Oh, that.
You know about it?
Naturally.
Well, it says there was something wrong about the transaction.
It would say so.
But it's all right.
Of course it's all right, darling.
Well, what does this man Elwell accuse you of?
Oh, just a squabble over interest in the Blue Star.
Well, why didn't I ever know about it?
I didn't want you to be disturbed over matters of business. That's my department.
Well, doesn't the lawsuit worry you?
I confess it did.
It did? You mean it's all over?
The suit has been withdrawn.
Oh. That's why you've been so worried ever since we arrived here at Ling.
Yes, I suppose so.
But it's all over now.
Quite over.
How long ago was the suit withdrawn?
Oh, I just learned of it myself just now.
In one of the letters?
In this very brief, very gratifying note. Yes.
Oh, Ned. Ned, I'm so happy. I've been so oppressed. I've been... Oh, I don't know what.
But it's all right now.
Yes, yes, it's fine, dear. It's all right now, isn't it?
Never write her. I give you my solemn word.
The diffused fears and doubts and suspicions that had thickened about us were dispelled, all at once. I'd never seen Ned so much his old self as he was now, gayer and happier than I'd ever known him. Ned worked on his book now, smoothly and steadily. I attended to the house. There'd been something wrong with the piping in the greenhouse, and I was puttering around there waiting for the engineer from town when I heard a step behind me. I turned, expecting the expert. I faced a youngish man of slight build, wearing a soft gray hat with a wide brim. He smiled wistfully, tentatively, and lifted his hat courteously.
I beg your pardon, please.
You are not the hothouse man?
I'm afraid not.
Who do you wish to see?
I came to see Mr. Boyne.
Oh, well, my husband's been seeing a lot of people this morning on appointment. Have you an appointment?
I think he expects me. However, if there are others ahead of me...
Oh, just a moment, please.
Yes?
May I ask if you've come a long way to see my husband?
I've come a very long way.
Oh, what a shame.
It's all right.
No, I don't think it is. My husband is free just at this particular time, I think. Now, why don't you go in and see him?
Oh, that's very kind of you.
He's in the library.
Thank you.
Go right through those lime trees.
Thank you. Thank you ever so much.
It took me all morning in that greenhouse made me hungry. We'll have luncheon now, please.
Yes, madam.
Will you call Mr. Boyne, please? He's in the library.
No, ma'am, he isn't.
Oh, well, then he's upstairs, I'm sure.
If you please, ma'am, Mr. Boyne is not upstairs.
Not in his room. Are you sure?
He's gone out.
Gone out? Did he leave a message?
No, ma'am. He went out with a gentleman.
Oh, which gentleman? He's been with several today, you know.
I couldn't say which.
Don't you know who he was?
I didn't let him in, ma'am. It was Agnes let him in.
Well, then ask Agnes who the gentleman was and where they might have gone together. Hurry back, please. I'm rather hungry. Agnes didn't know who the gentleman was, either. Not that it mattered greatly. I would go to the post office in town to post some letters and have dinner with Ned when I came home. It was twilight when I returned to Lane. The sky was like blued steel, and the wind of the downs was riding at full gallop. Without even pausing to ask Primly if Ned had returned, I made directly for the library and opened the door without knocking. Wind from the draft of the open door sent papers flying from the big desk. The library was empty. The sky was like blued steel, and the wind of the downs was riding at full gallop. Without even pausing to ask Primly if Ned had returned, I made directly for the library and opened the door without knocking. Gust of wind from the draft of the open door sent papers flying from the big desk. The library was empty. All at once, dread rushed upon me, racing to fill every cranny of my being. Dread of the unknown, dread of the indistinct, dread of the silence in that room and of the slowly billowing curtains at the open window. Fear took shape in there. Fear, breathing and lurking among the blue shadows. Something seemed to be in that room, something that watched. And that knew I was ice. And then I recoiled from that dread, intangible presence and threw my weight upon the bell cord and cried out, "Timmy! Timmy!"
And now the wind across the downs at Ling had lost its soft and gentle melancholy. There were demons in that wind now. Mary Boyne, confronted with that eerily empty library and the billowing curtains and the rustle of papers from the desk, turned and flung herself at the bell cord, calling for Trimley, the butler.
You rang, madam?
Yes, Trimley. Tea, I think. Tea for me and Mr. Boyne.
Yes, ma'am, but Mr. Boyne isn't in.
Oh, he came in and left again?
No, ma'am, he didn't come back.
Not since he went out with that gentleman?
Not since he went out with that gentleman.
Oh, see here, Trimley, you've got to know who that gentleman was.
I didn't let him in,
well,
madam.
Well, Agnes let him in. She ought to know.
She told you, madam. He didn't give her his name.
Did he give her his card?
I could ask her.
Oh, wait, don't leave me, please. I'll look about on the desk here for it.
Yes, madam.
Papers, letters, all over the floor. Draft when I opened the door a moment ago.
Yes, madam.
Oh, here's something. Mr. Boyne was writing a letter, it seems, when he was interrupted. Let me see. My dear Parvis. Finley, the gentleman's name wasn't Parvis by some chance.
I really don't know, madam.
Oh. My dear Parvis, I have just received your letter announcing Elwood's death, and while there is now no further risk of trouble. And that's all. And no help.
Shall I get you tea, madam?
Finley, what did the gentleman look like?
It was at some distance I saw him walking down the path with Mr. Boyne.
How was he dressed?
Well, you might say his hat was different.
How different?
It had an unusual wide brim.
Yes?
It was gray and soft-looking.
Gray and... Tell me, was he a young man?
Very young, I should say.
Man in the greenhouse?
Madam.
You said he'd come a long way to see Mr. Boyne. I told him to go in. Who was? Where have they gone together? Finley. Send for the police. The police came. They went. The papers came. They went. The whole machinery of official investigation swept the island of Britain. Ned was gone. The sunny English noon had swallowed him that day as completely as if he had gone out in some awful Sumerian dock. I remembered the last letter he had started. My dear Parvis, I have just received your letter announcing Elwell's death. Me. Parvis was a lawyer who could shed no light for the police on Ned's disappearance. Ned was gone. He'd been gone for 2 weeks. I knew that he'd never come back. Never in this world. Timmy, go to the door, please.
Mrs. Richard Boyne?
I am Mrs. Boyne.
My name is Parvis.
Oh, Parvis.
I'm a lawyer.
I know.
I've had some correspondence with your husband.
Yes, I know. He was writing you a letter, which he never finished, on the day that... On the day...
Oh, yes, yes, I know. The police showed it to me. I thought that you might wish to do something about young Bob Elwell's family.
Well, I don't think I quite follow you.
Oh, you know about Bob Elwell, surely?
Well, he had something to do with my husband and the Blue Star Mine. There was some talk of a lawsuit by him against me. And...
You know nothing more?
Well, what else should I know?
Robert Elwell was the young man who put your husband onto the Blue Star scheme. Your husband got in ahead of Bob and took over, so to speak.
Got ahead of him? Took over?
Bob Elwell wasn't smart enough, that's all. Survival of the fittest, I guess the scientists call it.
Oh, well, that jungle logic.
Business is business.
My husband would never... See here. Do you accuse my husband of doing something dishonorable?
Oh, no. Dear, no. Nothing crooked about it. It wasn't crooked and it wasn't straight. It was down the middle. Neither here nor there. No, I'd never call it crooked. Exactly.
Not exactly.
Oh, please don't misunderstand me, Mrs. Boyd.
Mr. Elwell's lawyers didn't seem to share your cynical view of the matter. They withdrew the lawsuit.
Oh, they didn't have a leg to stand on, technically. It was when they advised Elwell to withdraw his suit that Elwell got desperate. You see, he'd borrowed the money he lost in the Blue Star. He was badly up a tree. That's why he shot himself.
Oh, no.
When they told him he didn't have a show.
Shot himself? Killed himself because of what? Because of that?
Well, he didn't kill himself exactly. He lingered 2 months before he died.
Oh, how awful.
Everybody liked Bob Elwell. Now that he's left a widow and 2 young ones and an ailing mother, people have a strong sentiment that... Well, since you're the main beneficiary of the Blue Star fortune now...
I'll do what I can, of course.
Here it is in the paper. Rather bluntly put, I call it. Widow of Boyne's victim appeals for aid.
Boyne's victim? How can they say that?
It is blunt.
Let me see that paper.
Sometimes the necessity for journalistic brevity...
Oh, be still a moment, please, will you? Oh, this man here... This kitchen.
Robert Elwell, fine lad.
This is the man who came for my husband.
Mrs. Boyd.
This is the man I spoke to in the greenhouse. He went off with Zed. He.
What? It's impossible.
It's not impossible. I tell you, he's the man. I know him. I spoke to him in the greenhouse.
It can't be, Mrs. Boyd. Don't you understand? It can't be. Why, that man in that picture is Robert Elwell.
Then it was Robert Elwell who came for my husband.
Mrs. Boyd, on the day that man, whoever he was, came for your husband, Robert Elwell was dead.
Dead?
Yes, Mrs. Boyd.
My dear Parvis, I've just received your letter announcing Elwell's death.
You see?
My dear Parvis, oh, see here, I know what you think. You think I'm mad. But I'm not mad, really. Now tell me carefully. Be very careful. When was it that Robert Elwell first tried to kill himself?
When? Well, it was,
The 20th of October, was it not?
Yes, it was, yes.
Oh. And now I know. That was the day we saw him for the first time.
Elwell? You saw him twice?
We saw him from a secret ledge on the roof. My husband saw him first. He was frightened and he ran down ahead of me. But there was no one in the lime grove. He had vanished.
Elwell?
He tried to come back then, but he wasn't dead yet. He had to go back.
Mrs. Boyd.
He had to wait 2 more months until he was really dead.
Good Lord.
Then he came back. And Ned went with him. Oh, my God. I sent him in to Ned.
I sent him up to this very room. I told him where to go.
No, 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 Mrs. Boyd.
I told him.
Control, Mrs. Boyd.
I told him.
Yes.
And now I know. Now I know. There's a legend about Ling. You won't know you've seen the ghost.
The ghost?
Until afterward. Well, now I know. I know now. Afterward.
Mrs. Boyne.
How about it? Does it make you wonder? If you've any question mark in your mind, if you're not quite certain of everything, then fine. Our author, Mrs. Wharton, has certainly succeeded in just what she set out to do. Does this mean that Mrs. Wharton believed in ghosts? I haven't the slightest idea. But if I had to guess, I'd say no. I don't believe in ghosts either. At least, not particularly. So it's been gratifying to bring you Afterward by Edith Wharton on tonight's Hallmark Playhouse, and equally gratifying to have in it such fine performers as Loreen Tuttle, who played Mary Boyne, and Joseph Kearns, Willard Waterman, Robert Bruce, and Eric Snowden.
The Hallmark Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from August 5th, 1948 on CBS. And that closes this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. It's been a pleasure.